tree.
Redwood trees in California right now, just wishing they'd hear a little thunder and praying for a little bit of rain. Welcome to Hour 4 of Rosie on the House, where we come together every Saturday morning to help answer any question you have about your house, home, castle, or cabin. We answer your questions by you phoning us at the phone at the toll-free number 1-888-767-4348. We'll take questions on any topic, like I say, related to your house, home, castle, or cabin. In particular, today we've got a specialist in that we want to talk about trees some more. So we're here for you. We're here every Saturday for you. Give us a ring, 1-888-767-4348. We're broadcasting live from beautiful Flagstaff, Arizona. Not a cloud in the sky. Looking out looking out over the horizon, I can see the San Francisco Peak. I can see a little bit of snow there. And it's killing me to know the snow bowl's open.
And you're inside.
And I'm inside.
On a microphone.
But I did get to ski a glacier in Germany last week.
Oh, well, cry me a river.
With 100 centimeters of fresh snow, 3 feet of fresh snow.
Thank you. I needed that, calculation.
It was, to say the least, exhilarating. That's exactly what I did when I got out of the cable car and I looked at this. It's the highest mountain in Germany, Zugspitz.
And that's how many feet?
It's like 10,000 plus.
Okay.
And
so,
all you can
see. A lot
higher
than I would think.
As far as you can see in 360 degrees, all you see are snow-covered Alps. There isn't a tree in sight. And I just gave it the old LSU Go Tiger cheer. Yeah! And off I went. So we're going to have a show coming up soon about all my impressions and Jennifer's impressions of our first trip to Europe. Some truly innovative building techniques and products that I'm anxious to share with y'all, but I don't want to do it until I have a little bit more time to prepare it, and I got to get with my IT guy so that it's on the website while we're talking about it on the radio. Y'all have got to stay tuned for that. We'll keep you posted. Romy, we've got a special guest in studio here at Calf Country and Flagstaff. Why don't you make your introductions and let's get down to the topic.
You know, it's very interesting. We rely a lot on industry resources, so when this topic fell on this Saturday and we were going to be in Flagstaff, I went to the Arizona Community Tree Council and said, who do y'all have? And they sent me, and I said, I'm looking for someone in the Forestry Service. I'd like to talk about ponderosa pines and what's going on with the bark beetles. I haven't heard about that in a while. How's our forest doing up above the rim? And the guy that they sent me to said, you know what, I can't be there this Saturday, but when I get stumped, I call Mick. And so, Mick Henry, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you.
Oh, you know what? Let me do this for you. There you go.
Okay, thank you.
Turn your microphone on for you.
I appreciate that.
And we were sitting here talking off air. You have a pretty interesting history. Why don't we start with your father on halfway around the world?
All right. Well, you were asking how I ended up in Flagstaff, and I said I was directly here from Virginia, but prior to that, I lived in Australia. And so what took me to Australia was my dad, who was a frogman in the Navy SEAL team prior to getting injured. And then he wanted to be a gold prospector over there. And so he traveled to Australia and did very well searching for gold with the metal detectors and moved our family over there. And we lived there for 8 years. And so he used the metal detectors that he currently sells over in Prescott. And so he works for Tesoro Electronics for those Prescott listeners that work at the factory there. He has several people that call him for detailed questions on metal detectors, but he's the expert on that.
And that's Rusty Henry, and he used to drive the bus for the school, I understand?
Yes, so it's just interesting how many people I'll run into that, you know, they grew up in Prescott, and they'll just be surprised that, that that's my dad, and because they didn't know the connection. But many people that were on the football team or soccer teams, he would do a lot of that out-of-town trips with them. And anyway.
Well, very good.
So what's the story on Rusty the prospector raising Mick the tree climber?
Well, it's more or less that he taught me to be a very adventurous person and to love the outdoors. And I tried some indoor jobs and just couldn't tolerate it. And so I came out to go to NAU Forestry School, and from there I worked for the Forest Service, fought fire for 8 years, and got to learn how fire behaves through our landscape here, and I can apply that knowledge in my daily work through Mick's Tree Service that I own here in Flagstaff.
And talking about the fire, let's go ahead and start there. We've had a significant amount of the state burned in the last, how long ago was Cheduskai? Is that 18 years now?
It's, yeah, close to.
So in the last two decades between that, the Wallow Fire, the Yarnell Hill, the Granite Mountain, the Cave Creek Complex.
What was the Sedona Fire? Slide?
Slide Fire. Slide Fire. That was just last year.
Yeah.
Yep.
What effects?
It's close to 1 million acres when you add all that up.
And there's 3 million acres in Arizona, is that right?
No, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
They came very close to losing that fire, up the east side of that canyon.
The slide fire?
On the slide fire, right, down there at Garland's Lodge, where we've done quite a bit of work, and they were just able to catch it right there as the spot fires were starting across the highway. That would have been pretty catastrophic.
So someone with that knowledge in the year you've spent in the fire industry, how are our forests right now?
They're starting to dry out. We've seen some pretty aggressive bark beetle behavior recently. Not enough snowpack this winter to sufficiently give the trees the moisture they need to defend themselves from the bark beetles. Just last week, we were on a property where there were literally tens of thousands of bark beetles in their downed material that they had cut, probably a month ago, which was just not ideal timing. As the bark beetles were starting to fly, they were looking for trees that were stressed, and they had all these downed trees that the beetles were able to get established. And they were just a couple weeks away from what I would call the bark beetle apocalypse.
Oh, no.
So we were able to clean all that up, and literally tens of thousands of beetles removed from their property before they moved into the adjacent trees.
And there's some pretty interesting science you were sharing with me when we were speaking yesterday about how the beetle finds the deadwood.
Yes, the trees that are stressed in the pine forest release some terpenes that attract the beetles. And once a few of those beetles find a suitable host tree, then they release aggregation pheromones that tell the other beetles this is a suitable tree to get established in to raise their brood. And so it's very complex. The beetles will be attracted to that location, and then the beetles that are in that will release an anti-aggregation pheromone to make sure that their brood has sufficient material to survive, and they force the beetles to the next suitable host.
They just spread.
Oh, it's amazing. One female beetle can be responsible for 1 million bark beetles by the end of 1 year because of they reproduce however many times, like every 6 weeks, and about 50 beetles per time. So that's the exponential growth or population, I should say, of the beetles. Yes, one female can produce 1 million by the end of the year.
And a good, healthy, mature pine tree, how long does that take them to destroy it?
It's very fast. Most people would say a few weeks.
A few weeks.
Mm-hmm. And so basically you'll see trees that haven't had a chance to even hardly turn color, and they're dead because it moves that fast. They attack the tree. You would see what we call frass, which is where the beetles have bored in, and they've released this kind of sawdust beetle excrement that's called frass, and you'll see where the tree was unable to defend itself. The beetles are in that tree, and then they're quickly forming these galleries and nuptial chambers. And anyway, some really interesting things going on there. One of the researchers at NAU, Rich Hofstetter, has even determined that there are signals that the beetles clue in on, mating calls. One bit of interesting research he's done is to duplicate that male mating call and get the beetles to actually cannibalize and eat each other in the tree. So that's not been effective yet on a large scale, but he has been able to cause disruption in their populations on an individual tree that way.
You know, if my memory serves me right, and I travel Arizona pretty extensively, and I want to say it was about 10 years ago, you'd come in on 69 into Mayer and Dewey and Prescott, and you could just literally count thousands and thousands of dead trees. They were, that area, Walker, mm-hmm. that whole potato patch, that area was really, really hit hard. Then we got a little reprieve with a couple wet winters, and that's mm-hmm. so. What happens to all those beetles now?
Well, there's always beetles out there. They don't in our climate. They usually don't die off in the winter from prolonged, cool temperatures. So they are just out there flying, looking for stressed trees. And and like I was saying at this one property just last week, the beetles that were within a mile range there could clue in on that and be attracted to that particular location.
More right after this.